I'm Ruthie, host of Out There, here on Valley Free Radio. Tune in for stories from the streets and paths of Northampton and beyond, Fridays from 4 to 5 p.m. Get out if you can, but if you can't get out, tune in. We don't care if we live out of date. We don't care if we're a little bit late. Gonna make a scene, baby, me and you, on my rocking bicycle. Hello, my friends in Radio Land. Yes, this is Out There. It's Friday, August 26th. Thanks for tuning in today. And I'm actually pre-recording this like an hour ahead of time because I know I always get so flustered when I'm in the studio with the buttons, blah, 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 blah. So I figured I would just cut directly to this clip and play this clip. So how are you, people? I guess I'll tell you a little bit about my day. Oh, the rain. What a blessing. What a blessing. Oh, I'm so grateful for the rain. I was working in it, hauling trash. And let's see, I got two flat tires today. The first one was fine, uneventful, the middle of the day on the rear wheel of the bike. And so I pulled over into Winston's yard in the William Street neighborhood. I thought, oh, there's a shady backyard. Maybe there'll be a pear tree. Maybe he'll have a pump, a floor pump I can borrow. I had a patch kit and stuff. Anyway, so do you hear that thunder? That 3 p.m. thunder? Anyway, so yeah, he said his wife had the floor pump with the Presta adapter or the Presta compatible thing at the Cape. So had to use my little hand pump, but that's all right. Then I swiped some red raspberries from behind his shed on my way out. They were delicious. Then I figured I would try to borrow a floor pump from somebody, maybe one of the next customers, anyone I saw in the neighborhood. And then the next person I saw was Claudia Lefko out doing something in her garden. I was like, hey, Claudia, you got a floor pump I can borrow with a Presta that's Presta compatible? And she said, Presta, not sure. But do you want some raspberries? Help yourself to all the raspberries that are hanging over the fence there. Yep, word to the wise. That's Montview Street. Down on Montview Street, red raspberries hanging over the fence.
Then Mac rode up on his bike, Claudia's husband.
Claudia's like, do you have it? We got a pump with a Presta compatible. And Mac was like, sorry, nope. So then I went to the couple customers down. And then Darren Beek. And I rang the doorbell of that customer and Darren came out and he was... I don't really know who he is, but he came out wearing a NCC bicycle shirt. And he said, oh, my wife has a Presta compatible pump in her car. But wait, I have another one. So he went down to the basement and got me one. And that was very nice. So I pumped up my bike tire to full inflation, went on my way. Hi, Sage. That's my housemate on his e-bike. Bet he doesn't pedal if he doesn't have to. He just turned 20. Anyway, so I fixed the flat on my bike and then I was loading up kind of fast because the thunder and the storm was rolling in because I was still dry up to that point. And then right as I loaded up the last customer, it started coming down. And by the time I got to Route 10 on the way out to Valley, it was just coming down in sheets. And like the rain was okay, but it was like the thunder and the lightning that I was a little concerned about. So I pulled into the raceway. Speaking of thunder and lightning, maybe I should go home. And then it started coming down like crazy. So then I pulled into the gas station overhang, the racetrack or whatever that is. There was another guy on a bike that had taken shelter there too. And I talked to him for just a minute. And then I saw my coworker Leah ride by with a full trash load going down Route 10. And I was like, all right, if lightning strikes me, at least it won't strike me alone. And so I rode out through the puddles and the torrential rain to catch Leah, and I got to the other side of Route 10 and I realized, oh shoot, my trailer tire was going thumpa 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 thumpa, totally flat. So I pulled over to the right side of Route 10 next to that auto salvage place. It was underneath the power lines. Do you think underneath the power lines is a bad place to be during a thunderstorm? Well, anyway, so I unloaded everything off the trailer at a full load, 540 pounds, said, eventually it said on the scale at Valley when I rode through. So I unloaded all the trailer stuff on the side of Route 10. Now, how you patch a tube when it's pouring rain It's kind of challenging. But I figured I would just start because you never know when the rain could stop. Anyway, everything got wet. I pulled up the tube. It was no problem finding the leak because I pumped it up and of course it was hissing because it was already wet. But then I couldn't, the sandpaper wouldn't work because it just decayed in the rain. Then I was like, all right, I'll see if I can get into the office of the auto salvage place. You may ask why I didn't go back to the gas station. That's because because Route 10 is so difficult to cross, and I'd already crossed it once, and I wasn't going to try to cross it again. And it was like 100 yards by that point. But that's too far for me. If it includes two busy highway street crossings. Anyway, so then I tried to go into the office of the salvage place. They were friendly. But I was actually afraid of going inside anywhere to try and patch it because, like, people have air conditioning, and when you're drenched, air conditioning is really cold. But anyway, I didn't have to worry too much about that and the office of that building because, yeah, the air conditioning was on, but the back door was wide open, so it wasn't too cold. I'll save that rant for another day. But I still couldn't patch my tube because, like, it was kind of just, I had nothing to wipe it off with. So then I was like, well, then it had stopped raining for a minute. So I went back outside to my trailer and the paper tote, and I grabbed some tissue paper that was in the paper recycling that I'd picked up and dried off my tube with the tissue paper. Then I was able to patch it. That was great. Put it all back together. Because it stopped raining for a minute, and so I got a break and was able, just enough of a break for the glue to dry or the vulcanizing fluid to vulcanize put more appropriately. And, finished it off. So anyway, and I made it home, but it sounds like just in the nick of time, because listen to this. I have another hole in the tube.
Tell me why you're crying, my son. I know you're frightened like everyone. Is it the thunder in the distance you fear? Will it help if I stay very near? I am here. And if you take my hand, my son, all will be well when the day is done. And if you take my hand, my son, all will be well when the day is done. What mankind has done in a world filled with sorrow and woe. If you ask me why this is so, I really don't know.
And if you take my hand, my son, all will be well when the day is done. And if you take my hand, my son, all will be well when the day is done. Day is done. Day is done. Day is done.
on the road again. It's Monday, August 1st, 2022. We left at 4 in the morning. I had my nephews drop me off on the side of the road, on the side of Alcoa Highway, on the way to the Knoxville Airport where they had to go. Why? I do not know. They offered to take me and drop me off at the Catholic Worker. I was like, no, drop me off on the side of the road so I can get a little bike ride in and get the cobwebs out of my head. Anyway, why? I don't know where I am. They showed me on the map quickly on their Google Maps. But why I asked them to drop me off here, I don't know, except for I am Ruthie Woodring and that's what I do. But it's not raining and I have a bike, so it's all good. And I'm very glad it's not raining right now, because Eastern Kentucky has been under flood waters. Last news report I saw said at least 26 people had died. And my friends from Northampton and farther out and about asked me how my family and I are. We're fine. We live up high and not near any big creeks or rivers. The rich people build their houses on the hills on solid rock. Ah, dang, but the ticks still bite me. All right, I'm on my way to Atlanta via the day in Knoxville, a day at the Catholic Worker in Knoxville, and then the bus to Atlanta to see Nedra Deadweiler from Civil Bikes. What do you know? There was a greenway right around the corner where they dropped me off. I couldn't see it in the pre-dawn darkness, but all paths led me there. And now it's like 6:30 in the morning, and I'm just standing by the river with the birds and crickets and cicadas and stuff on the greenway, and the railroad yard rumbling in the distance. And it blows my mind that I just came from this interstate sprawl, interstate hell morning rush hour up above somewhere in the city and coming into the city and for miles in every direction across the country. But right here, it's like existing on a different plane. Down below in the lowlands along the river. And it's quiet. There's like no one here. How these different worlds can exist simultaneously blows my mind. And I'm glad there's people who've worked to create this world for people like me. The river creek, actually, it's kind of flooded and thick brown and full of debris and trash. But at least it's not a river of cars. So it's Tuesday, August 2nd, 2022.
Woo!
We're in Atlanta.
Yup.
Backyard of Nedra Deadweiler and roses
Tinker.
And dogs. So Nedra, one of the things you're famous for is Civil Bikes.
Yeah.
What's that?
Civil Bikes is a heritage tour company, like essentially. We do biking and walking tours. We've done a lot of advocacy around transportation as well. We do bike education, a lot of advocacy around mobility, and also advocacy around like history, historical narrative, how we talk about where we are from. And it was started really not necessarily about tourism. It was really more about bringing people together, mm-hmm. talking about history, talking about place, and maybe having some understanding and like being able to, I won't say coexist, but live more interdependently, mm-hmm. and not it be sort of like where I had moved from other cities, just adult life, you know, gentrification is a thing, and but like, you know, maintaining that cultural memory or connecting to the cultural memory of a place.
Can you talk a little bit about how you started it?
Yeah, really it was on a whim. I had grown to love riding a bike, and when I came back to Atlanta, I found it very difficult to keep up some of the things that I was doing. At that time, I had moved from Seattle, and like I joined a bike club, but I'm not a road cyclist. That doesn't really interest me. I don't mind riding in traffic, but it's like, okay, commuting and then whatever. I lost a job or I was let go from a job. I was told I didn't fit. They told me I didn't fit the culture and gave too many opinions, which I wasn't trying to give opinions. I was just trying to help. But with that, I was like, I'm done with social service. Maybe this is just not for me. And so I was like, I'm just going to do what I love. So if I can do something about biking and people and history, great. So I met a friend who was a journalist from Belgium, was here. That was when Alabama was starting their civil rights trail. So he was doing like a press tour of their civil rights trails. It all conveyed this feeling. But we're traveling from, you know, different towns within Alabama in a car, but I'm in the back of the car, so I can't necessarily hear all the narrative she's saying to him because I'm in the back. But I know enough of history and seen, you know, Eyes on the Prize and various videos. Mm-hmm. So thinking in my mind, Alabama, and or even just like what it's like to be in the South. So I'm in the back of the car looking out the window, and I'm just thinking this would be way more fun on a bike. Mm-hmm. And that's how the idea hit me. And then I started trying to be like, okay, wait a second, I could do this in Atlanta. I didn't know what I was doing. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what I was getting myself into. Mm-hmm. I didn't know. I just kind of followed inspiration. So this was back in 2013. It was that summer, June of 2013. By September, got a business license and registered with Secretary of State. And then it was like, I am really a shy person. I'm not one to be like, hey, let's like set up at a meeting or do all these things. Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, I started attending meetings. I started, I guess, like going to some bike shops. Like I went to some big bike shops and I met this guy named Neil Walker. He was a league bicycling and master coach. I didn't know this at the time, but he was doing a lot of trying to help Black folks start organizations. So he helped me with getting bikes. That was one thing eventually. Like I went to Performance Bicycles, which no longer exists. But Neil Walker, eventually we met him and he encouraged me to become a league cycling instructor, an LCI. So I'm an LCI. And he helped me with getting my first load of bikes, which thankfully, I was with someone at the time who had been in bikes from being a messenger, someone who'd raced, someone who knew how to worked in a bike shop, understood like how to mechanically fix a bike because these were pretty low-end Raleighs. And they broke a lot of plastic components and things broke and had to replace. So just spent a lot of the money that I earned that first year replacing parts on these bikes. But then the next year, I used money to earn to buy 10 bikes because I needed something that was a little bit, that were better. And then there was also another thing that was taking place because this is, again, 2013, 2014. And Atlanta was trying to make this change. Really, it's like the creative class, you know, if we were talking about Richard Florida's theory around, like, how cities, what is going to make a city kind of an interesting place to live for this change in economy that we have, that you have to have certain type of amenities for the creative class, and bicycling was one of those things that fit into that category. And so Atlanta was developing some bike stuff. So there were some initiatives where people wanted to include biking into those initiatives. Auburn Avenue had been a Black community. So just economically, a lot of people who had businesses there, either if they were not part of the economy that catered to lower income folk, then they left the area. And so, I mean, it might be like a corner store or some, you know, something like that was there, but it was hard to find a restaurant or hard to find anything else. And so this was the city's idea to put in other businesses to bring people to the area. Mm-hmm. We were given a space for 3 months, so I had a space. I mean, I put a lot of my money into it to like paint it and clean it up. I did get a small grant from them to buy resources. but because the building had been unused for a long time, it needed a lot, like plumbing, you know, it needed a lot of work. So I had a free space, a free storefront, but you know, after 3 months, I couldn't pay the rent there. Business has never been like robust, so it's, and then I would go on different tours that were taking place in the city, and I met one person, Dr. Cliff Kuhn. He had started an oral history program at Georgia State, a part of the Masters in Heritage Preservation, and really became a really good support and just like, you should go back to school and do this, and a good connector. So just had the opportunity to meet some people that were supportive. I started, you know, doing more teaching, and then I eventually started working with Georgia Bikes, which is a statewide bike advocacy organization. It's kind of always been like a side project, but it really takes up a lot of my personal time because it's something that, yeah, it's a passion project, so to speak.
Yeah.
And then the other part is, it's even though it's like heritage tours, we're talking about, you know, Black history or talking about history more deeply than just, it's not about tourism. So I think that part misses people too, because the whole thing is like, let's have conversation about the history and about where we're at. And sometimes that can be a challenge, and myself and the tourists have a different agenda. So it's an anomaly in that sense. It's not really about, it's not really about tourism. And so like, it's hard to be in one camp or the other, and sometimes we've been pigeonholed as like, oh, you just do civil rights history, and it's like, no, we actually talk about a lot of other things too, but I think it's easier for people to like put it in a box, just because it's more digestible and it's easier to explain. The bottom line for Civil Bikes really is about creating and building community and therefore creating change. And so if I'm also like, I want to survive in this world, then, you know, it creates a frustration for me if I'm putting my resources back into this.
I told you I pulled out the map of Atlanta from probably like 1969 or something, from my dad's old stash of maps.
It's amazing.
And when I read the tourist sites on that map, it's a very like white golfer kind of map. Like, it's got the golf clubs, the golf courses. That's what's listed on this map as sites of attraction. Like, who is driving cars, visiting and touring at that time? And so it's like, okay, well, those maps, that tour map, that's more than just a tour too. You know, the Civil War sites, and whose perspective is that from? Any tour has its agenda, whether the tour leaders think it does or not.
I mean, you're 100% right. Every tour that you go on is going to have an agenda, the perspectives, who is telling it, and then who is telling it, how they're telling it, what story is being told, you know, what artifacts are being used, if it's artifacts or buildings, and how, like, how they name, say, other people, you know, how they're called out. For instance, it was on Antebellum Trail recently, and, you know, in some places they're still calling people slaves, and it's just like, the term has evolved now. It's like enslaved people, or people who have been enslaved, and that's been for a little bit of time now. The operative people, or people who have been enslaved, and that's been for a little bit of time now. The opportunity that we have now to look back at, you know, these sort of like blueprints, you know, a lot of these people are blueprints. Ella Baker was in Atlanta, you know, she's a blueprint, like her whole life's work is a blueprint. If we understood her, if we looked at Ruby Parks Blackburn and like the work she did and how she built these communities, got women involved in all of these issues and kind of became this national advisor, you know, another blueprint. If we can look more, you know, zoom out and like understand principles, policies, you know, understand these like pillars that could really be an anchor to what we're wanting in our society today. If we're saying that we want equality, we want justice, then if we can look back at this and like see how that was, those principles were infused in these organizations and the impact that they were able to create, we can take those things and then, like, you know, personalize them, pull them into our work, then maybe, you know, we could actually move the needle a bit further. So it was less about, like, dates and events, to be really more about how can we create change.
You're listening to an interview with Nedra Deadweiler of Civil Bikes in Atlanta. This is Out There on Valley Free Radio, WXOJLP 103.3 FM in Northampton. I've got about 8 more minutes of that interview left. Back to Nedra. Sorry for interrupting, Nedra.
How can we create change? We really need to embody this, the spirit of these people, in order to heal society, you know, broken society, broken in the sense that we're creating systems that are really set to destroy us. So we're talking about capitalism, you know, we talk about, like, everything is designed for money and not for sustainability.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's bigger than me.
Yeah.
I stopped riding my bike for a while because it became a bit of a frustration. And really the thing that got me back on my bike, I got sick. And then I went on that trip to Sierra Leone, and it kind of, and then in the summer working with young people.
So are you excited about going on a bike ride today or tomorrow?
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, I am. I am. I like riding the bike. I like riding my bike. And so that part makes me excited. Mm-hmm. Everywhere I look, there's construction. The city is rapidly has changed in the past years, like all these neighborhoods.
Do you feel like Atlanta is getting more bike-friendly or less bike-friendly, and for who?
I think it's more bike-friendly. Good questions. I think it's definitely more bike-friendly. People slow down. Sometimes. I mean, sometimes not. Some people got... I mean, there's also a lot more road rage. People just drive faster, you know, faster and faster than used to on surface streets, coming through neighborhoods even. But it's nice to have a trail system that connects. Who is it built for? I mean, it's still definitely a design expectation, regardless of race, is like someone who has money. Mm-hmm. And people who don't, like, there's an assumption that they're going to steal your bike. We're at like a public space last week with a bike camp, and we were told, like, watch your bikes. You know, homeless people might come and take your bikes. Mm-hmm. So whether or not it's true, you know, it's just kind of like, the expectation is it's okay to be on a bike if you're a person of means, but if you're not a person of means, then there's just going to be the extra added level of scrutiny. Atlanta is a city that has a lot of Black people that are on bikes. There are a lot of different organizations here that even took off over COVID that has allowed that to take place and become manifest. And there are organizations that are working for... like we have WTF group, we have and rides, and then just more people are getting on a bike. Maybe every group isn't for everybody, but everybody can find a community of cyclists. Again, if people are of means, then it's a lot easier. I will say it's harder for children. The South is just becoming a place where people retire because it's more affordable to live. And so a lot of retired people of means are riding bikes or e-bikes. Uh-huh. Like, e-bikes is allowed for that to be a thing here because it's not Seattle, but it's a hilly place. Atlanta's a hilly city. Bike share, I don't think it's been a successful project here.
There's electric scooters, though.
There are electric scooters, and people love the scooters. Uh-huh. Yeah, scooters have definitely made a dent, and it's here. They're here to stay.
Uh-huh. So the Beltway.
Beltline.
Mm-hmm. Beltline. Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's okay.
Can you just describe that briefly?
Yeah, the Beltline. It is a 22-mile loop around the city, connecting. Maybe it's 54 different neighborhoods, connects a number of neighborhoods in Atlanta. The idea of the Beltline as it stands started with a master student from Georgia Tech, Ryan Gravel, and he worked with city council person Kathy Willard to kind of vet it through communities. We have this thing called NPU, neighborhood planning unit and basically development kind of, it's one of the pathways that development is to go through in order to be approved. The way the Beltline has been developed in stages, there's the east side, west side, north side, south side, and there's another organization called the PATH Foundation, and the PATH Foundation has created other paths that connect and intersect with the Beltline. Yeah. Yeah. But it wasn't supposed to be just like biking and walking. The whole goal was to put a light rail along the Beltline, but it's like a matter of fundraising and grants and maybe even political will to get that in priorities, getting these things to take place. We do not yet have a light rail that's going around the Beltline. So to make it more egalitarian and opportunities for everyone, put the light rail on in the beginning. It would allow people to access different and better jobs. The lack of the light rail is not the only reason, but all development along the Beltline has been luxury. And even it was, I think the last, I think it was like 95% of all development over the past whatever years has been luxury. So it's just created a city. The Beltline has been part of the impetus to like luxuriate Atlanta. You know, it's not, we have a dearth of affordable housing and just a dearth of housing. It's been great to meet you, Ruthie. It's a refresher to remember there are reasons, you know, like principles and values matter, and live, you know, like kind of constructing your one's life around that. It's important. Something that inspires me, artist. I mean, I'm kind of creative.
Oh yeah, your Civil Bikes artwork. It's really beautiful. The artwork around your house. It's really beautiful. And your yard, backyard.
Yeah. Thanks. Nature is a thing that's. Is inspiring. Trees, like, it's nice to listen to the birds, listen to the wind.
We sort of skimmed a bunch of different projects, like Civil Bikes, the bike camp. If people want to connect with you or go on a bike tour, or what's
next.
Or what's the best way to like find out more about what you're up to?
I say email us, because or Instagram sometimes, but that's probably it. Auto post to Facebook. Website is not really up to date, but email works. civilbikes@gmail.com, and then maybe social media.
Yeah. Is Civil Bikes going on tours actively now? Was it postponed for COVID?
We postponed for COVID. We've done a few tours just because with the organ, like the Swiss consulate. You know, it's like, of course, I'll take you on a bike ride. But I'm really thinking about, like I was saying earlier, about blueprinting, looking at the life of Ella Bakers.
And can I tell people that you picked me up at like 2 a.m. from the Greyhound station last night?
Sure. But it was in that spirit of like, you're a community-oriented person, like-minded person. So I just felt, you know, it was like a like-minded thing. And yeah, I know you'd do the same for me if I was coming through your town. So hadn't had opportunity to even practice that in a long time.
Thank you.
So I miss the opportunities to like do these things because they just don't present themselves anymore. I mean, I kind of miss like the ways to be in community with folks. So thanks for the opportunity, Ruthie.
Yeah, thanks.
You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. That was an interview with Nedra Deadweiler from Atlanta, from Civil Bikes in Atlanta. Nedra mentioned some things like WTF, that stands for Women, Trans, Femmes, like a national network. Also Red Bike and Green. Red Bike and Green is a collective of Black urban cyclists. And also BGDB. I don't know if she mentioned BGDB. That's Black Girls Do Bike. Another national network organization. You may be wondering how I ended up in Atlanta interviewing Nedra. We had actually never met, me and Nedra, but it all started back in July when Nick Richard, he does Bike Talk here on Valley Free Radio and podcasts that show, biketalk.org. But Nick was like, hey, Ruthie, you want to interview this woman? And, you know, he meant a Zoom interview. And I was kind of like, Nick, I don't really do Zoom interviews. I just interview whoever I run into on the street. But I was like, well, all right, I should stretch myself. Okay. And that was like in mid-July, I think. And then I was in Kentucky. And to come back to Massachusetts from Kentucky, basically I got to get the bus out of Knoxville. And then I was like, well, I got to go to Knoxville. Why not just go 4.5 hours further on south to Atlanta, and maybe I can meet Nedra in person. And so, yeah, the timing all worked out. The bus ride was complicated. The bus got a flat tire. I met another cyclist who was riding across the country. Nedra ended up picking me up at 2:00 in the morning at the Atlanta bus station, which was really nice because initially I only contacted her about a Zoom interview. And one thing leads to another, and she's picking me up at the bus station at 2 a.m. and letting me stay at her house. So thank you very much, Nedra. Nedra Deadweiler, Civil Bikes Heritage Tours in Atlanta. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio, and I think it's time for a song. Angelique Kidjo, Born Under Punches, from her album Remain in Light.
Congo, Congo, Congo. Take a look at these hands.
leaving Nedra's, I had to go look for a place to pee, and so I came into this woods park area, brushy. Anyway, and it led to the park, led to an orchard right next to I-20. That's the roar in the background, Interstate 20. And this orchard has apples and then fig trees, gigantic fig trees. And the figs are almost ripe, and I'm pretty sure I can find one that's ripe enough. Oh my gosh, this is like a fig orchard in the city park, and I can help myself, it appears. It's actually mid-season for these figs. I overlooked that. I didn't see many purple ones. I thought maybe they weren't ripe yet, but I should have known. If you want to know if some fruit's ripe, you look in the ground, on the ground, not in the tree. And there are rotten ones all over the ground. They're just like earth-colored. And I just gorged myself so much. My tongue is burning. How can your tongue burn from figs? That's enough figs to last me until my next trip to Georgia. Maybe. Actually, by the time I get like 3 miles from here, I'll be like, figs. I'd like a fig. Biking through Atlanta to the bus station from Kirkwood. I'm passing the Beltline, the famous Beltline, on Glenwood Park on the north side. It's like a pedestrian separated bike lane, paved like a shopping district. And then on the south side, it's a gravel path, not paved. I kind of like that. This place is loud. There's just like construction equipment. There's a power washer generator on the sidewalk, weed whackers, riding mowers, trucks, air conditioners, interstates. Ruthie yakking for a radio show. I've seen apple trees, mulberry trees, ginkgo trees, those giant persimmon trees. Like, not little American persimmons, but the big persimmons the size of a small apple. They're not ripe yet. They're green and hard. And of course, lots of magnolia. There's a dawn redwood. And I think a lot of crepe myrtle, oak, tall pine trees, okra plants in people's gardens, dogwood, cedars, a rosemary plant up to my chin, roses, pecan trees, spiderwort, cherry trees, peach trees, some variety of elm, boxwood, arborvitae, holly, poofy sodgrass, major street crossings with no street signs, red bud, Bradford pear, red maple, I think, some kind of maple, I think it's red maple, tulip poplar, buckeye, I think, willow, witch hazel. There's more, of course. I just don't know the names of them, so I'm not admitting the ones I don't know the names of. Now I'm going through Oakland Cemetery. But when I told my coworker Ben from Northampton that I was coming to Atlanta and might be arriving in the middle of the night looking for a place to rest my head, I was like, hey, do you know any woodsy park-like places near downtown? And he said, Oakland Cemetery? And as I look around here, so many places a person could rest their head. It's kind of like an arboretum too. Should I go through the list of trees again? No, probably not. So going through Oakwood Cemetery, I stopped
Oakland Cemetery.
Oh, sorry, thank you. Oakland.
That's okay.
Oakland Cemetery. I stopped to ask directions from this friendly guy with a volunteer name tag. Walt Haber. What's your name?
Haber. Walt Haber. That's Haber. Right. I'm Walt Haber. I'm a volunteer here at Oakland Cemetery.
And you like bikes?
I do ride bikes. I've been riding since 1985. Longest ride I've done is about 900 miles from along the U.S. Route 66 from Springfield, Missouri, all the way to Albuquerque, New Mexico.
And you also do bike tours in Atlanta?
I do. I lead bicycle tours in Atlanta for a company called Bicycle Tours of Atlanta. We have a bike tour called Fall in Love with Atlanta and another one we do called Atlanta's Journey for Civil Rights, and both of which are really impactful, and we enjoy showing off our city and telling the untold stories of the city of Atlanta by bicycle. It's a great way to see the city in a unique way. We're kind of off the beaten tourist path.
Yeah, cool, thanks.
And the way I got involved in Oakland, by the way, is this is one of the stops on the bicycle tours, both of them.
Uh-huh.
And I fell in love with the beauty in this place. And the more I spent time in here, the more I got interested in the history of it and I became a volunteer here, I don't know, 8 years or so ago, and I fell in love with the place and the people who spend their time here, and I absolutely love the place.
Oh, that's cool.
So I kind of hijacked you while you're visiting here. It's my favorite thing to do. In fact, some of the other volunteers tease me. They've turned my name into a verb. You just got walted.
That's great. You got roofied.
That's perfect. That's awesome. That's awesome.
You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. That sort of wraps up, I think, the Atlanta part of my trip that I've got clips from. Next week, we'll make it to Richmond, I believe. And in Richmond, Virginia, is where I get off the bus and ride my bike to go see Eunice Mukuria, who is the mother of Peter Pitt Mukuria, who's a prison pen pal and a prison radio correspondent and activist. Yes. Before I leave Atlanta, the Atlanta thing, I want to say one more thing. So after my last stop before I got on the bus that day was a visit to the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial National Park. And there on the wall, the six principles of nonviolence, which I would like to share again. Number one, nonviolence is not for the faint of heart. Number two, nonviolence seeks to defeat injustice, not people. Number three, the goal of nonviolence is reconciliation. Number four, redemptive suffering holds transformational power. Number five, nonviolence pertains to physical acts and internal thoughts. Number six, the universe is on the side of justice. Yes. So you're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I have another, which last clip? It's 10 till 5, according to the studio clock. So I got time for one more clip, and then we'll go out with a song. Here we go.
Summer nights. There are many things I love about having a backyard. We are in quite a drought now, so being careful about water and trying to take advantage of any that we have is important to us, especially because we have so many plants and things in the backyard. The drain pipe on our kitchen sink decayed, rusted through, and I bought the parts to replace it at the hardware store. But we decided that just putting a bucket under the sink was better for now, because then we save the water and put it on the garden. Another thing I've started doing is washing my clothes in buckets outside, being generous with the water because we need the water for the garden, for the tomato plants and things. And then something else I've taken to doing is taking my bath. My bathe in Trinidad, they would call it a bathe. It's not a shower and it's not a bath. You know, when you got your bucket of water and you put it over your head, which is the way that I normally bathe, because that way you have exactly as much water as you want and it's exactly the right temperature. And it's not wasting away while you try to keep it from scalding you or freezing you. Anyway, but with this drought, I've taken to bathing outside so that all my bath water goes to the plants that we're trying to keep alive. There's a young pear tree that we have in the backyard. So the last few nights I've taken my bath next to it. And it helps me feel close to it. Like more our survival is mutually dependent. Not that I need a bath to survive, but it just helps me feel a little more one with the earth. A
Also, having a backyard without lights and light pollution is super helpful because we're right next to the bike path. But it's dark, so I feel safe. Even naked. But sometimes it's easy to lose track of things in the dark. Like this morning, I went outside to let the ducks and chickens out. I was like, why are my dirty shorts and underwear sitting out on the log in the backyard in plain sight? Oh yeah, I was out there last night, wasn't I? Sometimes it's nice to have lonely friends who come over and make their dinner here and play guitar.
Yep, that's the backyard of 8 High Street. The music was mostly my friend Ben Ross. He's a musician, and I was recording outside, sticking my recorder up against the window screen. I think Alex Jarrett was probably singing with him a little bit. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. You can listen to archived editions of Out There at weatherbeard.com/out there. And today is Friday. What announcements can I make? Well, I'll mention the farmers markets Wednesday in Florence, Tuesday in Northampton, Saturday in downtown Northampton as well. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! Coming up at 5 o'clock. And here is So Chronics. I always like hearing Chronics, so we'll go out with some Chronics. Actually, this is Protégé featuring Chronics.
And it's a Protégé, eh?
Yeah.
Chronics are where you say, eh?
I'm pleased to be chilling in the West Indies.
To
provide all my wants and needs. I got the sunshine, rivers and trees.
When me see Jah, me see a way. Drastically straight from hypocrisy, I say, hey. Every man to them own a philosophy. I live the proper way and then me read a chapter daily. Man, they in a city hungry and no eat. And food they down a country, does a drop off of the tree then. You see, say poverty no real then. Is what the reasoning revealing.
To my friends and foes,
hello.
And I suppose,
hello.
I'm pleased to be chilling in the West Indies.
Oh,
I provide all my wants and needs. I got the sunshine, rivers and trees, green leaves, yeah.
When the rain pits up at the roof, herb just a steam, pepper pot on the stew. Life is a dream if you got gratitude. So go tell the regime, them can't stop what we do now. Information you think on your own, or else you're a slave to the things that you know. What do you know if you learn every day? So be careful of things where you say.
Who knows, who knows, who knows, who knows. I just go where the shaping blows. Sending love to my friends and foes.
Hello.
And I suppose,
hello.
I'm pleased to be chilling in the West Indies.
Oh,
to provide all my wants and needs. The sunshine, rivers and trees, green leaves.
Africa in our soul, but a Jah in our heart. It is of importance for I and I gather. If we cannot show now a balance that we had, how do we propose then to carry it abroad? Then I go to Ethiopia and you not have a plan. The building of a nation and a helper and every one a lover, one a man is just a man. It shall be a coronation when we land, land, land.
Who knows? To my friends and foes,
hello.
And I suppose,
hello.
I'm pleased
satisfied all my wants and needs. I got the sunshine, rivers and trees, green leaves, well.
And I say we just
who knows,
moving
who knows,
yeah, man.
Who knows, babe?
We just move
oh,
with joy every time.
I'm pleased.
And give thanks,
we've been chilling in the West Indies.
You see that smile
and
on me,
provide
man.
All my wants and my needs, oh, Dre.
You want to learn to fix your bike? How to keep it tuned up so it's there for you when you need it? Or maybe you know already, but you just need to borrow a bike-specific tool that you don't have. Well, come to the Bike Lab.
Almost every Saturday since 2004, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., here in Northampton at 12 Northern Avenue.
Come with your bike or your questions.
And your willing attitude.
Spare parts scavenger hunt every weekend.
Vengan al Bike Lab de Northampton, el taller de bicicleta. Aprende a arreglar tu bicicleta y a divertirte.
All repairs guaranteed to the end of the driveway.
Details are online at pedalpeople.coop. That's the Saturday Bike Lab at 12 Northern Avenue,
11 a.m. to 2 p.m.
They say freedom isn't free, but at the Bike Lab it is.
Ya súbase a la bici, compa.
Actually, the Bike Lab is 11:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. 11:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. Yeah, that's it. 11:30 to 2:30.